Welcome to the first ever episode of the Yellow and Blues Cricket Podcast, where we talk about all things Indian cricket and the Chennai Super Kings. I'm your host, Srini Patsardi, an ardent cricket fan of the Indian cricket team.
And I'm your co-host, Venkat, who's literally married to cricket. We both live in the UK and have done so for many years now. It's our shared love for things, especially Indian cricket and Chennai Super Kings, that has brought us together. The podcast is a result of a number of conversations and debates we've had along with a few of our friends about all things cricket. So we decided to record this and share our thoughts and opinions on this podcast.
Thanks, Venkat. On this episode of the podcast, we take a look at the strategy of Chennai Super Kings in the recently concluded IPL mega auction and discuss the possible starting 11. We'll also look at the Indian women's team, you know, who are currently down under in New Zealand, discuss the changes in test captaincy of the Indian team and the teams for the upcoming Sri Lanka series. We'll review last week's action from Boys in Blues against West Indies. But first, we'll start with a quick roundup of the news from what's happening around the world in cricket. Interestingly, Venkat, you know, I think a good place to start would be with around James Faulkner and the controversy at PSL. What did you think about that?
Yeah, it's quite interesting. And then it's when I first read the news, I thought it was James Faulkner who wasn't paid, you know, given the tweet that he had. He said, "I apologize to the Pakistan cricket fans." On Saturday, he sent out a tweet saying, "But unfortunately, I've had to withdraw from last two matches and leave PSL because PCB has not honored my contract." And he said, "My intention was to bring international cricket back to Pakistan. But then, the Pakistan Cricket Board hasn't honored my contract." And so it was bizarre. And so I'm obviously waiting for us to hear from both sides of the argument. This announcement actually came in the midst of some seriously bizarre financial controversy between himself and PCB. The PCB then tweeted saying, "In December 2021, James Faulkner's agent had given them a UK bank account for fees payment to be transferred." And then they did. And then in Jan 2022, the agent James Faulkner had gone back and said onshore account in Australia. But by that time, PCB, according to them, have transferred about 70% of the fees. And then if they did transfer to the account in Australia, that would mean like them paying twice. And so I think they also have tweeted that it has been unanimously agreed between PCB and the franchises that Mr. James Faulkner would not be drafted in future PSL events. And while this was happening, there were also reports that James Faulkner had thrown his bat at the chandelier in the hotel, damaged and paid damages to the hotel authorities. PCB also, I think, said that they had received messages from the immigration that there was some wrongdoing and he was not behaving properly with them. And so, yeah, it is all it's all a bit bizarre when you look at the circumstances under which this has been happening. But then, if you look at it, it is really down to whose side you take and, you know, which side of the story is true. It's worth noting that the man of the match for Australia World Cup 2015 has had a history of bitter financial dealings. I think last year he left his BBL franchise. I think he was with Hobart Hurricanes, claiming that the club had made him a disrespectful money offer. So I think there is a bit of history to it. But there is also, you know, allegations, which it's not the first time we are hearing that the PCB or PSL is not playing its players. So there we go.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, kind of, I don't know how this will kind of translate into, like, Australia is obviously set to tour Pakistan, I think later next month for a full series with terms of, you know, test and ODI and stuff. But I guess this, you know, that may not be having sort of any impact on the fans, you know, who are looking forward to having Australia coming over. So that'd be interesting. It's, I mean, if you look at it in some ways, it's actually James Faulkner's loss, really. Like, you know, the PSL, I'm sure, will go on. There's players from all over the world who will come and play in the PSL, and it's probably, you know, something that is James Faulkner's loss, you know.
Yeah, he's not sold in the IPL as well. So if he would have got the contract here, you know, it would have made a difference. But then there is also a hilarious, you know, tweet or set of tweets from the other side of our Indian border. This is supposed to be a hit job by BCCI to slander PSL and its success. I mean, that's a bit far-fetched.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you see how a small incident or instance of you know, animosity kind of gives rise to cross-border international politics. Exactly.
That's I mean, in terms of interesting kind of other news, you know, one obviously something to look at from where we are in terms of, you know, living in England, the big news kind of doing around at the minute out here is the dropping of Anderson and Broad to West Indies tour. I must say, like, you know, it was a very, very surprising move. I wasn't expecting both to be dropped, and possibly one of them in terms of, you know, because given the fact really they... Well, not necessarily outstanding. I think they did quite well in when they played in the Ashes. So what did you make of that in terms of, you know, them both being dropped?
It was a bit, it was a surprise, but one that I saw coming. But I think the English board, in my opinion, could have handled it between players and themselves and said, hey, listen, we are looking to consider other players. And frame it as though they have been rested, which in fact would have made a lot of sense in my opinion. If you do want often younger, newer players, it's it makes perfect sense. Broad, in my opinion, has still got to be that in that plane to the West Indies. But from my point of view, I think this could have been handled a bit more respectful to those two players. Anybody would definitely want to play as many tests, but we have India coming over for the decider, for which Anderson and Broad may be required. So I think they could have played it a bit more, you know, respectful and mindful of where and their contributions to the English cricket. I think that's what we hear from other players as well, that they could have handled this better. That's my take. Yes. The writing is on the wall. Nobody disagrees. Yes, their time has come, but they do deserve a bit more of, you know, having contributed to English cricket for nearly two decades. I think they do deserve a bit more going out on their own terms rather than, you know, unceremoniously dropped.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. Let's hope, like, you know, For the sake of the English fans, you know, let's hope the lasting memories are not, you know, the defeat of the Ashes in Australia, and, you know, they do get to play in the summer here this year, and, you know, sort of get a send off if that's how, you know, it's going to end. Let's hope. I mean, you talked about, like, sort of bringing in new players, and that's probably a good segue into kind of the controversy currently going on in India. I mean, there's two parts to this. One, for what, you know, the dropping of Riddhiman Saha, but in terms of, like, you know, the specific tweet that came out from Riddhiman Saha, or Saha Gate, that's now, as it's now being termed, in terms of, you know, in Twitter, looking at, like, you know, a journalist threatening Saha, and, you know, it's not clear who it is. There is a lot of speculation, but what did you make of that?
Yeah, I think it is. It just goes to show the online bullying and the powers that the digital media wields on lives of individuals, even though Saha has been a fighter for Indian cricket team. He has stepped in when the chips were down, when people haven't been you know, really looking at him for a longer term, or so I think, for long story short, I mean, I'm kind of thinking that if that can happen to somebody like Saha, imagine the plight of ordinary, you know, lesser known cricket individuals. They are almost at the mercy of the journalists here, quote unquote. Yeah. I think it is, it's a bit strange. I think the board needs to take these allegations seriously. I think the latest report is BCCI already has set up a commission. There is definitely something that this needs to be dug into. I don't know why Saha didn't name. I think he should have gone ahead and named the player. That kind of gives rise to, he should have named the journalist. I think this goes to show that there could be something in the previous exchanges. So we never know until we get to the bottom of this. But clearly, something that's not very welcome. And this is a scourge of the modern society that we live in, where 24/7 news. So this is bound to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you mentioned that. In terms of yes, he's not named it, but he's at least gone public with it, rather than, you know, sort of just keeping this low. I think, yeah, definitely, you know, needs to be the whistleblower. You know, whistle needs to be blown on, you know, kind of who the actual journalist is. I know there's a lot of speculation going on without us needing to add to it, this, you know, on a particular journalist, so to speak. But it'll be good if, you know, Saha actually comes out and says, like, you know, who the journalist is. So it's people realize, like, you know, this is not on.
Yeah. I mean, he has the digital records, right? He's not going to spoof. I mean, there is a clear chat transcript. You know, I think that those are. It's not going to be very difficult. I think a lot of cricketers, I saw Sehwag backing him. I saw several, I think, there was several other tweets that I saw in support of Saha. What I don't want to happen is that this gets mixed as though he's making noise on his exit. I think these two need to be looked into, two separate issues. Irrespective of whether he is dropped, he's not to be considered, or he was asked to consider retirement or whatnot. All those things can stay at one side. That needs to be seen in a different light. Whereas this allegation, I think, needs to be taken up as a separate, in my opinion, a separate investigation.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's probably a nice way to segue. And, you know, you talked about his dropping as a separate one. Maybe that's a good way for us to, like, you know, start discussing or looking at the Indian sort of team selection for the Sri Lankan tour. You know, we've obviously seen, you know, that there's a new captain. We'll talk about the new captain probably in a minute or so. But let's probably look at, you know, starting with Saha, dropping him, but then also along with him, kind of Ishan Sharma, Rahane, and Pujara, call it restart, call it drop, however you will. I think it's fair to say Saha has come out and said, like, you know, although he's not specific to that, he's not said it in explicitly that Rahul Dravid talked to him about retirement. I think the conversation more seems to be Rahul Dravid said, well, you know, you are not going to be selected. As we start to look at youngsters, and so, you know, make up your mind and do what you will. That's probably how it is.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I had seen that video. I think the press was questioning Rahul Dravid about that and asked, are you disappointed that Saha? He was very clear. He said, I have utmost respect. I know how it feels. And then he was very clear, and he said, you know, not many people like it. When this kind of conversation happens, he was also clear that I don't want him to hear from the press that he's going to be dropped. So I just thought I would deliver the bad news. I think that's a very good, I mean, I can see a different change, in the leadership style. From what I hear and see from the news reports, I think Dravid has done the right thing in terms of saying, hey, there are only three tests this year. We are already invested on getting youngsters. You have Rishabh Pant, and as a fallback, you have Ishan Kishan now. And I don't think, you know, at Saha's age, I don't think he would be looked at. I think that's pretty much what the summary of that news report was, which I think is fair enough.
I'm not sure if, you know, Ishan Kishan is probably going to be the one. It's probably, I think, at least in the test match arena, I think Kona Bharat, think he was in the backup in the New Zealand series, isn't it? So Kona Bharat is probably likely to be Rishabh Pant's understudy, so to speak. But yeah, as you said, you know, that's clearly Rahul Dravid, you know, at least paying up front and sort of facing a bit of saying clearly, we are investing in youth. And we've seen, like, you know, Rishabh Pant, the only batsman, you know, the Indian wicketkeeper to have actually scored hundreds in England, South Africa and Australia. Yeah. So clearly, like, you know, he is India's number one choice terms of wicketkeeper.
Yeah, his keeping may still need some improvement, but he has come a long way from the Australia tour that we had a couple of years back, with him getting the tick off from then coach to say, hey, you got to shed some pounds. And he also played a bizarre shot to get out, and I think he got a tick off. And from since then, I think his keeping has definitely improved a long way. So, I can see that, you know, there's no way. Rishabh Pant is fit, that, you know, anybody else could get into that spot.
Yeah, I mean the other kind of, you know, for more than who's been selected into the team, I think the notable dropouts, if you like, you know, Pujara and Rahane. Interesting to see, actually, both have gone back into Ranji Trophy, and Rahane's kind of, you know, responded with 100. Pujara got a first inning stuck, and then he's come back with a 91 in the second innings.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in my view, I think this has been a long time coming. You know, we've discussed this across kind of, you know, our various sort of platforms and conversations that we are, you know, before that, you know, both Rahane and Pujara, they've been given a very, very long rope.
Yeah.
To speak, and it's almost like, you know, well, they seem to have hung themselves with that rope. You know, it was just going to be like, you know, Kohli backed them. I know there could be like a conspiracy theory that goes around saying, like, Kohli backed Ishan Sharma, Rahane, Pujara, and everybody, and all of them, you know, seem to have been dropped as he gets, or as he's left his captaincy. But it's probably not that, you know, it's that they have had enough chances.
Yeah.
And given Sri Lanka is the team, I think it's a fair enough call to have rested them both.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I think there is, I mean, I see this, you know, scoring centuries in the list here, Ranji Trophy games, as one thing. But the gulf between that level and international is going to be completely off the charts. I mean, if that can be so easy, everybody would do that. But good on them. No disrespect to Pujara or Rahane. They've been, you know, they've taken literally blows for Indian cricket in Australia, in South Africa. So I think, you know, what I'm trying to get to is, yes, this is one thing that you have people going back to the local leagues and scoring big, but you know, there is that gulf in terms of the levels between these two international tests in South Africa and Australia and England is one thing. And even Sri Lanka, in my opinion, would not be easy. They have they've proved to be worthy opponents. I think from what I see of them in Australia is going, they are a fighting unit. I think this will not be easy for India. In my opinion, they've got a couple of good spinners. Their pace attack looks decent. So it's not going to be walkover for India. So it's better that they put the best team.
Yeah. I mean, we'll probably look at, you know, kind of more in depth in terms of the test team, probably in the next episode of stuff. And you know, obviously the first, I think next week, the T20Is are the first, you know, three games before the next podcast. We'll probably have, you know, all the three T20Is completed. Kohli and Pant both have been rested, and I think it's a fair call on them. And Sri Lanka, yes, they lost in Australia in the first couple of games, but even the second one, I think, went to a super over, and they lost it in the super over, and then they won the third the 30-20 I. So they will be coming in, like, you know, in high spirits. India beat West Indies 3-0, kind of, you know. The second one was probably a close one.
Yeah.
You know, if you just kind of look at doing a wrap, you know, in terms of the series that just finished with the India and West Indies one. Where what would you say is the takeaways for India? Do you think, you know, in terms of our preparations for the World Cup, you know, later in Australia, have you made any progress or found anything new in this T20I? Yeah.
I think Venkatesh Iyer has clearly been the revelation. He had the potential, we all knew, and he had a mixed bag series. But this one, clearly, he's shown he'd got a few chances, but definitely he has shown some promise, head and shoulders, and a worthy all-rounder as well. It's not just with the bat, but with ball in the last game. He proved he was drafted in. I think Rahul Dravid again was very clear in his message. I'm looking at him as a sixth bowler. He should step in when the captain needs and the situation warrants, not expecting them to have a bowl every game. And so I think he's done his job very well. I'm sure you could see Rahul Dravid being happy. He would be handy. And of course, Rishabh Pant did Rishabh Pant things. So he was really good. And my important takeaway is also, in my opinion, return of form of Kohli. Some of his shots were just brilliant, outside off. And the way he was moving towards the line of the ball, I think those are all positives coming in from this. And the camaraderie between Rohit and Kohli, despite what the media was saying about the rift and this and that, and I think they showed that they could lead almost together. But Kohli decidedly playing a backstep, and Rohit Sharma definitely taking charge. You could see, and so in summary, you could see Rohit's captaincy and his assertiveness amongst the team. Venkatesh Iyer, Rishabh Pant and Kohli's forms are a big, big plus. Ravi Bishnoi is something that he has a promise, but we will wait to see. And I'd love to hear your thoughts, Srini, about what do you think about, because you bowl spin as well. So I just want to hear, kind of see what do you think about Ravi Bishnoi. Very fits, especially when you have Chahal.
Yeah, it comes down to, you know, we are looking for preparing for Australia, and clearly, like, you know, the grounds are bigger in Australia. So I think, you know, spinners will have a role to play in Australia, you know, when we go down for the T20 World Cup, you know, with the bigger grounds, they will definitely make a difference. For me, it was both, you know, in terms of, I think I was quite happy to see some of the options that India explored, you know, Ravi Bishnoi getting his debut, Avesh Khan, you know, he definitely deserved, you know, for all his performances in the IPL. I think Avesh Khan, he definitely, like, deserved his debut. Us Yellows and Blues, you know, very, very happy to see, like, Ruturaj Gaikwad making his debut as well from, you know, from a CSK perspective. That, yes, it's just one game, you know, it's a few deliveries, he didn't really set the world alight, but, you know, we've seen what Ruturaj can do in the last IPL, you know, for CSK. So I'm hoping, like, you know, there are more opportunities, and, you know, in this with both Kohli and Pant not being around, you know, sort of Washington Sundar is also not, I think, available for this series against Sri Lanka. So hopefully Ruturaj Gaikwad gets a little bit more opportunity. I think the experiment of, you know, trying to get Ishan Kishan to open, I think it's probably not been successful. And I think Ishan Kishan probably is a better middle-order batsman, at least at this minute. You know, we should probably just go back to Rohit Sharma, maybe possibly Ruturaj Gaikwad in terms of opening the innings in T20I, followed by Kohli and then, you know, Sky batting. I think we've definitely got the makings of a good T20I team for the World Cup. It's a shame, like, you know, Deepak Chahar getting injured with his hamstring in that last T20. I mean, Venkatesh Iyer did well to, like, you know, board his quota, but segueing that into kind of, you know, our other love, which is CSK, like, you know, Deepak Chahar was like the biggest buy from a CSK perspective in that mega auction. It would be really a shame, you know, if his hamstring injury rules him out for the next 4 to 6 weeks and he's not able to start with the IPL. That set apart, what did you think about, like, you know, CSK's strategy in terms of, you know, the auction buys?
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. That's a good segue from India to CSK. I think CSK has always been, rewarding loyalists. I mean, so basically, whoever wants to, and I think the emphasis is on culture and how the players would fit. I was not expecting them to pick Bravo again, given that even by his own admission, he's getting old. But that just goes to show how much CSK emphasized on the culture and the fit. They retained really three key players. And so they already had the core. I think that's a very good auction strategy, that you have your three key players. And they did go for Faf, Nick and Tooth, but it didn't work. I do understand Shah Jahan. Shah Rukh Khan would have been buy as well, given his performances recently. But overall, I think I'm happy with the team they've got. I would say it's about 80%. They also know that. But it can only get better. They do have a good mix of potential as well as experienced players. One thing to see is who's going to lead CSK in the years to come. Isn't Tony playing one more season?
That's a very interesting point. I mean that's one of the things kind of I was looking at. If you went back and looked at the final from last year, they actually retained 8 out of the 11 players who played in that final. So that's, you know, from that perspective, definitely, like, you know, it seemed the core strategy was to, like, you know, retain the place. But as you say, like, you know, this auction is not so much about just this year. You know, it's about kind of the next 3 years. Possibly, we don't know whether there'll be another mega auction. You know, this one was more likely because of the two new teams. So therefore, you had the mega auction, and therefore the ability to, like, sort of almost rebuild the teams from scratch. But as you said, you know, the culture that CSK have gone back in terms of, you know, rewarding loyalty. Sure, people will argue, like, you know, and the biggest loyalty, if you like, you know, would have been Suresh Raina. And that would be, like, you know, sort of a big thing in terms of not seeing Raina, not just in the yellow, but not in the IPL at all next season. That would be the man they described as Mr. IPL. it would be a change to, like, you know, actually watch an IPL without Mr. IPL without in there.
I touching very briefly on Raina, I think we all saw this coming. I mean, everybody, I mean, if you go back to the controversy and the unceremonious exit, I think, you know, we all saw this coming, and there was reports of patch up and discussions and stuff. But I don't think, you know, once you have while CSK are historically backing people who have been loyalists, but once you break that, I think it's almost like they wouldn't take it back. There was a question posted to the CSK management as well in one of the interviews, and he was very clear that, we thank Raina for all the services. I think, you know, as a left-handed batsman, they have Moeen Ali to do that job. So when they retained Moeen Ali, the message was loud and clear that, yes, number three, number four, we are looking at a pinch hitter. We have got Moeen, who is from our neck of the woods, which is good. But same about Raina. He has done phenomenally well for CSK. But I think deep down, he himself would know that he was not going to be considered.
Yeah, Yeah, I think that's a fair enough. Devin Conway, definitely, like, you know, a good replacement, I would say, for Faf du Plessis, you know, that role, yeah. Probably. I guess the opening slot's likely to be, like, you know, sort of Ruthraj Gaikwad, definitely one, and the other one, depending on the surface, yeah, or the location, between Devin Conway and Robin Utapa. Yeah, that's... look forward to, give it, I think, you know, in a couple of weeks, 3 weeks, hopefully the IPL schedule will be out. I know it was rumored that, you know, it's probably going to be played in and around Mumbai and Pune, and we'll see how the team shapes up. We'll have more kind of, you know, closer look at what's likely to be the first sort of playing 11, and so on, you know, in the next few weeks, kind of, you know, podcast as we go along. Before we wrap up, the other thing that we probably want to have a look at is, like, you know, the India women out in New Zealand, you know, it's there's been some, like, kind of, you know, statements that's kind of come out around Harmanpreet and, you know, her not really scoring as the and things like that. It kind of, you know, suddenly made me think about how over the last, I don't know, maybe since probably Dhoni and onwards, you know, on the Indian cricket, we were predominantly focused on what India were doing in on-field and very little focus on the off-field activities and stuff like that. For India, there was the whole, you know, sort of Supreme Court committee and things like that. But but suddenly it seems like, you know, in the last, since Kohli decided to step down from T20I, there seems to be a lot more focus on, you know, kind of the off-field on the men's side. And that seems to have also, like, you know, gone over into the women's side. I mean, Jemima Rodriguez, even though she performed very well in the BBL, and, like, you know, and both Harmanpreet and her were actually quite good in the BBL. Jemima's not actually with the Indian team out in New Zealand, and she's not even in the World Cup squad, which seems to be, like, you know, a surprise as to, like, you know, where the Indian women's team is going. I mean, we can probably have a look at more on the Indian women's team squad in the next week, you know, just before start of the Women's definitely. World Cup. But yeah, it's, you know, they are out there and they've already lost the series, you know, 3-0 out of the five match series. Smriti Mandana seems to be, like, you know, the next captain in waiting, so to speak. It looks like Mithali is probably, like, you know, whenever Mithali decides to, like, you know, retire or leave, suddenly Harmanpreet seems to be out of favor now, and Smriti Mandana is likely to be the next captain, or at least that's what seems to be the, like, you know, news sounds doing.
Yeah, I think it is fair. You know, the reports in what the BCCI appointed committee, Edulji, I think she was the captain, former captain, when she says that, you can't just survive based off of 117 of 115. I think she scored that in 2017 ODI World Cup semi-final against Australia. You can't just live off one good innings for this long. I've agreed there hasn't been much cricket. It does seem to be a long wait, but, you know, there hasn't been much cricket in the last couple of years with the COVID, you know, playing a part. And so, yes, that wait seems to be even longer. Same is the case with Kohli as well, to a certain extent, is that there's not that much cricket being played. But then, coming back to the women's team, Jemima Rodriguez, as you rightly said, Ramesh Pawar, who was the coach, said, yeah, that the same thing needs to be applied to Harmanpreet, the same yardstick. I think, as you rightly said, if you look at the captain's forerunners, I think Smriti Mandana definitely is going to be a front runner on that format. I think there was also calls for Shefali Verma to be dropped because of performances. But I think she's almost like the Sehwag in the women's team. You know, she's a swashbuckling batter. But let's see how much rope she gets.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is probably not the right time for them to be like really chopping and changing and making changes, especially like the squad's been announced and the teams are out there in New Zealand in preparation for the World Cup. It's definitely not going to be easy with probably Australia and England sort of being the favorites. So yeah, it'd be interesting, I think, to have a look at that. I guess on that note, we can be probably wrap up the this week's broadcast.
Well, that brings to the end of this week's podcast, the Yellows and Blues podcast. Your host, Venkat Srini, signing out until next week, where we will review India-Sri Lanka T20 series, preview the In-Test series, and India women's chances on the World Cup. All
Yeah,
right.
thanks, Makart. And if you like the sound of this, please subscribe to this podcast and follow our Twitter handle at Yellow and Blues. And leave your reviews and ratings about the podcast on Spotify or any other platform from where you get your podcast from. Until then, see you next week. Bye.